Illinois State University student Jennifer Lockmiller was stabbed and strangled in her off-campus apartment in 1993. A man was wrongfully convicted and spent 13 years behind bars for that murder. Alan Beamman of Rockford was back before an Illinois appeals court this week, arguing he should be allowed to sue the town of Normal and three now retired police officers for malicious prosecution. It's the fourth trip to that court, the latest ordered by the state Supreme Court. WGLT correspondent Edith Brady Lunny covered the arguments and joins us to talk about what the Supreme Court wanted the appeals court to redo.
The Supreme Court sent the case back to the 4th District Appellate Court for a second review of what the standard should be for having a trial for Alan Beamman on this civil litigation. They asked him specifically to take a look at whether or not he'd been treated unfairly because the police were putting undue influence on prosecutors to charge in the case. And according to the law, that's kind of a necessary standard because generally police and prosecutors will have a pretty broad immunity in these types of cases.
They're presumed to be operating in good faith in trying to do their job and discern
yes.
who's guilty, who's not.
Exactly. So Beamman's lawyers are arguing that this was a bad faith investigation, that the police knew things that they didn't disclose to the state, that they focused, had a hyper focus on Alan Beamman from the very beginning, when in fact they had another more viable suspect, and that they took that approach with the prosecutors and unduly persuaded them to charge Alan Beamman with murder.
Alan Beamman has alleged malicious prosecution before. This is the fourth time that he's been before the appellate court. What's new in nuances this time?
What's new is that the Supreme Court has tried to narrow the issue for the appellate court and asked them just to specifically look at that undue influence portion of this, and to go back and look at it a second time. And the four times include Alan's criminal case that he had, and the appellate court in the 4th District in Springfield has never ruled in Alan's favor on any of his cases.
Is that unusual?
Not really. I mean, I think if they have a long history with a case, as these at least two of these justices, Jim Connacht and Robert Steigman, have been involved in Alan's case for some time. So they know the background. And I'm assuming that being human, they take a position. And it's very hard to get them to change their mind about it.
So previous court actions have removed then state's attorney, then judge Charles Reinard from culpability for the case, and then first assistant state's attorney James Suk, and later judge James Suk, and it's focusing on police conduct and whether they influenced the prosecutors. What are the arguments that the lawyers on both sides made yesterday?
Alan Beamman's lawyers are sticking with the argument that they've had for many years, both in the federal court case that was ultimately dismissed because of immunity, and at the state court level. Their argument is that Alan Beamman was innocent. Alan Beamman has been totally exonerated, and now he is entitled to having a jury of his peers decide if the police were guilty of misconduct in putting him into that position, not only being charged with murder, being convicted, but serving almost 13 years behind bars. So their argument is, but for the police misconduct, if the police had conducted a better, a broader, more thorough investigation, that Alan Beamman would have been set aside as the most likely suspect in this case. The town's lawyer, Tom DeCiani, has stuck with his arguments that the police did a good investigation, that they looked at that second suspect and determined that he was not more likely to have committed the crime than Alan Beamman. And they also deny, the town and the officers deny, that the officers did anything inappropriate. But the town does admit that there was at least one piece of evidence that would have been very helpful to Alan Beeman had they passed it along in their police report. And that was one of a multitude of time trials done of driving times from Rockford, where Beeman lived, down to Normal, where Jennifer Lockmiller's apartment was located, and a trip back. There's a pretty narrow time frame where they know he must have made a trip had he done the murder. That one trip that would have fit Alan's alibi that he was home sleeping at the time was never included in a police report. And that's one of multiple things that the town has alleged in this in terms of misconduct. In other words, the police turned over the information that they wanted to turn over, and some of it that would have been helpful to Alan was not given to the prosecutors.
Is that cherry-picking enough to prove bad faith?
Well, that's what the appellate court has to look at. I mean, they have to decide whether or not these items that were not turned over to the prosecutors was enough to show bad faith. Now, the Illinois Supreme Court found a basis for that in terms of exonerating Alan back in 2008. His conviction for murder was reversed based on the fact that they said the evidence was tenuous at best.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with WGLT correspondent Edith Brady Lunny, also a former Bloomington Pantograph newspaper reporter. Often, justices or judges will give a little bit of a sign during oral arguments about where they think the tipping point of a given case will be. What could you tell from the appeals court judges yesterday as you watched the oral arguments?
One of the most telling things for me was the fact that when Alan's attorney, David Shapiro, stood to give his arguments. And keep in mind, each lawyer is only given 20 minutes to make their opening argument. He really only got probably less than half of that, if that much, because Judge Steigman came right out of the gate with a barrage of questions for him on the probable cause issue. And to me, that shows that, at least for Judge Steigman, he doesn't seem to have moved from his initial position in his opinion that if police had probable cause, and that was solid for at the time the charges were filed by prosecutors, in Steigman's view, that ends the discussion. And his taking so much time on that one issue, combined with James Kinnock's questions, about his position about whether former Detective Friesmeier lied during the grand jury and his doubts that it was indeed a lie when he denied that police had another viable suspect, tells me that at least those two justices seemed pretty solid in staying with their former opinions.
It's a three-judge panel. Judge Tom Harris of Lincoln was the third one. Any smoke signals there?
His questions, I thought, were more focusing on the current state of affairs with the case. He asked Shapiro, for example, to explain, what is it exactly that you think the Illinois Supreme Court wants us to look at? In other words, he doesn't seem to be bringing his well-settled opinion of this case. At least he didn't bring it to the bench yesterday.
Jennifer Lockmiller was killed in 1993 in her off-campus apartment, stabbed and strangled. A former an ISU student, a former Illinois Wesleyan student. 30 years, nearly 30 years, is a tremendously long time for something to go on. Why?
Well, of course, the criminal case took, you know, a fair amount of time for him to be investigated and to have a trial. And then there were, you know, a dozen years of court filings, court proceedings that were, really pushed by his family. I think if Alan could credit anyone for his release and his exoneration, his parents probably would get the credit for that. Well, just seeing them yesterday, Carol Beamon now is walking up the steps for the fourth time to this courthouse, now using a cane. It's this case has taken a toll on everybody. These three police officers that are accused and are still named in a lawsuit are all now long retired. So, you know, the process has just drug on and on through various courts and proceedings. And you know, that's why we'll have to see what happens next. Surely a resolution to this will be coming in the near future.
What else can we expect?
Well, whoever loses this can, of course, ask the Illinois Supreme Court again to take a look at it and review it. And the court, of course, can make a choice on that. They can either review it or take a pass. The last time was very interesting because they said they would take a pass on Beamon's request to have his loss at the appellate court reviewed. And in a very rare move, the court reversed itself and came back and said, no. Well, we've decided we will take a look at it and ultimately send it back to the appellate court. So either side that loses can do that. And so the Illinois Supreme Court can also finally resolve this. The court could say, yes, finally, we think you've met the standard, Alan Beamon, to have your day in court. Or no, we don't believe you've met the standard, and it doesn't appear that that's ever going to happen. So I think if this case doesn't go the right way for either side, it's certainly going to end up resolved by the Illinois Supreme Court.
Because the Fourth District Appeals Court has been overturned several times in its decisions about Beamon, do you think they're taking this one in a slightly different light, perhaps?
Well, they've had this case, you know, for a very long time. The Illinois Supreme Court has also had this case, though, for a very long time. The justices know the backstory on this case. And I'm sure that in their decisions, all of what they know comes into play with this, both the appellate court and the Supreme Court, and comes into play with their decisions. The Illinois Appellate Court for the Fourth District has not been sympathetic to Beamon's position or the positions of his attorneys that he was wrongfully convicted. And I think you've seen that thread be maintained all the way through all of their decisions, whereas the Illinois Supreme Court has kind of taken a far more sympathetic view in Beamon's case. And of course, that led to his exoneration and the state deciding not to retry him.
Is it possible that the judges at the appeals court level will say, we're tired of getting overruled, we'll give this another think?
They may, of course. That is an option, you know, that the appellate court could say, you know, we believe it's possible that this is an issue for a jury to decide. Hand it over to a jury and let a jury decide and have these witnesses come into court, have these police officers come into court and explain exactly to the jury how they put this case together. What did they consider important and what information did they leave out? They could, but I will say based on their reactions and their questions yesterday, Alan has a very tall hill to climb for that to happen.
It is often a fruitless exercise to try to predict when an appeals court will decide a case, write the opinion, and then publish the opinion. But in spite of the fact that it might be a fool's errand, when do you expect this thing to come out?
Well, generally, the Fourth District rules within a matter of months. So it could be by the end of the year. Or early next year when they come out with an opinion. Obviously, if they have an opinion that's well settled that they're not going to move from, it could come sooner rather than later.
Edith Brady-Lunny, WGLT correspondent and retired Pantograph newspaper reporter, thank you so much for joining us and for covering the ongoing arguments in the Alan Beamon case. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlinker.